All righty. Well, we're going to get on to part two of this study on the opening verses of chapter one in Genesis, the question of whether they're what most tended to have believed up until probably very recently, whether there was a canopy that's being talked about in those early verses or what. And we looked at that information last week of whether it would be a canopy. So we're going to start by just kind of rereading those verses so we know what we're talking about. Genesis 1. I'm going to get there, I promise. Okay, we're just going to read to verse 10 for now. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. There was evening, and there was morning one day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and there was morning a second day. Then God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear," and it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. And you can continue down to verse 13. He talks about the vegetation coming in on the earth, the fruit trees, etc. And that's when he says there was morning and evening, third day, and it was good, you know. So that's where we were last week. We kind of opened the study talking about, okay, is, because it says the waters above the expanse and the waters below the expanse, so people have assumed, okay, so there's waters above the earth, the expanse must be the earth in general. And so that's where this canopy idea came from. Last week, after the class, Jordan asked me a question. He says, so why this deal about the canopy? And I explained to him, well, you know, most people, when you ask in a congregation, if somebody asks a guy who's teaching or a preacher or whatever, you know, what is Genesis 1 here talking about? Most of them would, because it was the accepted answer of the day, most would say, "Oh, well, that's talking about the canopy, the water that was over the earth," and you know, or they'd say water, ice, vapor, whatever. Typically, water that was, you know, circumvented or went around the earth, spherically above the earth, and that's what helped provide the water for the flood. And that's when they're talking about the waters below the expanse, waters above the expanse. That's where it came from. Okay. And last week we looked at that information and looked at some of the problems with that, how really a canopy would not work. Because when you get anywhere near 40 feet, you have all kinds of problems that come up where there's heat and pressure and all these things that happen. It just, life on earth would not exist, let's just put it that way. So most of the individuals that have promoted the canopy theory typically go with somewhere less than 40 feet. So the information I brought last week was dealing with that. Canopy stuff is typically predicated upon less than 40 feet. And then Larry asked a question at the end of the class that he said, well, and I don't know if I answered it well enough, and I'm going to paraphrase his question. It's something to do with, well, wouldn't it create like a, I don't want to say a hypothermic, or a, what is it, hyperbaric chamber. I suppose if there was a thin enough water vapor, it could probably do something like that where it would lock it in. Hyperbaric chambers basically lock in and feed you more oxygen. That's how you heal faster. There are side effects that come from hyperbaric chambers because of the pressure, okay? And it's usually going to be ear and nose or sinus type issues because of the pressure in a hyperbaric. Those are mild side effects that can occur. There's others. But so if you had a very thin water vapor, there's still problems with how does it stay up there. Ultraviolet issue is still an issue, you know. It would dissipate, not dissipate, it would disassociate the hydrogen and oxygen chemicals so they would not remain together to create water. It would basically just disappear. there's still those problems, no matter what you do with a water or ice or vapor type canopy. So that, you know, it could it be? Yeah, I guess it could be. But then the other thing is, so you got a maybe a foot thick canopy. Let's just use that number arbitrarily. That's still not enough water for the flood. I mean, when they take all these guys, I'll get you knowing. When they take all these guys' ideas of the thickness of the canopy, they still don't have enough water to accommodate a worldwide flood, let alone the, all these things that came because of the flood. You know, the destruction on the earth, the changing of the face of the earth, so to speak, still doesn't address that. So you still don't have enough water. And they've calculated that even if you have just less than a 40-foot canopy, that's still only 0.5% of all the water in that canopy that's presently on the earth. You still got a water problem, not enough. So like we said before in the coin Jared statement, the canopy theory holds no water. So, Mr. Toole.
Well, I meant to ask, but so I understand that the source of water can't come from the canopy. And then, you know, last week you went through all the stuff talking about if there was a canopy, how it just doesn't work. Right. So I think I'm tracking. So when God says that he separated the waters from the waters, he's clear that the waters below he gathered together and he called it the seas. And then an expanse was between the waters. I don't know if you're getting here.
I will.
That water, it's not a canopy. But you're headed there. Because yes. That's where my brain's at. So what is that?
That's the big question. Okay. So, you know, we don't want you getting too far ahead of the preacher here. So. What? Oh, okay. Hey, I got to teach tonight. I can't have all these questions. What's going on with you guys? Okay.
So just to clarify, I've never, and I haven't spent a ton of time in this, I've never envision thought of the water canopy as a 40-foot, you know, wave above your head constantly. I've always taken it, and from way it's been presented to me, which was only once by Don Patton, was that it was just a totally different atmosphere. It was a much more oxygen-rich atmosphere, which that was what led to the longer lives. And it was just a lot more humid. That's so I don't know if that's really the water canopy theory, but that's, and yeah, it wasn't 40 feet above your head. It was still, you saw blue sky, you saw
40 feet thick. I'm sorry if I said 40 feet above.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. So yeah, I always took it as, yeah, it wasn't just this thick thing of water. It was more just a totally different atmosphere.
Yeah. Thanks for the correct, or help me correct that. I didn't present that clearly. It was supposedly way above the earth and above the atmosphere, Larry, is where most present that. And that's where all these problems come into play.
Just my understanding, you, Kevin, you're dispelling the myth of the canopy providing the flood water.
Yes.
You're not trying to teach how the water or the earth got watered.
Right.
Okay.
No, that's a separate deal. And we can deal with this. Oh, here we go with another question. All right.
Well, some of us learn by asking questions, Kevin. So, hey, but just to piggyback on what Larry's saying, you absolutely agree that the environment was different.
Yes.
And if I understood last week, the environment's different because when the fountains of the great deep burst open, you're saying not only did we get certain elements that were underneath the earth's crust, but many of their isotopes. That's going to change radiation levels. So the environment absolutely changed, which explains extinction events and things of that nature. And so that's what you were saying.
Right. Yes, and that's...
Before you disappear up
there. Okay.
I wouldn't.
No, that's right. It's fine.
And again, when it was presented to me, they presented that, you know, maybe like 10 or 20% of the water came from the top, but still water shot up. The majority of the water came from the ground because there's no way possible you get it all up there. And the Bible says it came from top and bottom. So.
Right.
Can I back you up on one point?
This is going to be a six-week deal.
When I was listening to you last week, I wanted to say this, but I wasn't. On the isotope thing, I had a blowout on a rear tire at 65 miles an hour, and it forced me into a water disposal area. So I got to know the guy there a little bit and talking, and I was an oil truck driver, but all the water truck drivers got to go to the crock pot, so I didn't. So I got to talk to him. The water disposal from the great depths that they're drilling oil for, and you have to imagine up there, they're going way down, a mile and then a mile horizontal. The radioactivity of the water is actually monitored where he was at, and he said sometimes it glowed. So some of that stuff that's down there that they're bringing up, not only are they pushing chemicals down, but there's just the regular salt water that's coming up. It has stuff in it that you don't want to be exposed. It always made my boss curious. They got so upset when we spilt crude oil on the ground. But if you take that raw crude oil and just dropped it on grass, it would get taller and greener. But if you take that salt water and dropped it on the grass, it would kill it. So that's to back you up on that eyewitness isotope thing. It's a real thing.
It is. And that's where I think the answer lies on the change from why guys lived 900 years old to where there was a precipitous fall off, even with Shem, who was on the ark. I mean, there was a 300-plus year fall off in his lifespan. Then when you look at, like, down to Eber and Peleg, I mean, it drops off precipitously again. So, and that's within those guys were born within 100 years or so of the flood. Okay, if you look at the way it reads in the book of Genesis, the cataloging of the genealogies. Okay, so you can see that there's a rapid decline, okay, in lifespans. And that they have tracked, we'll do a little bit of review on it, they track that back because of the 23andMe and all these other genetic things that you can do now where you turn in, swab your mouth or whatever and turn it in and they track your DNA. They figured out, the number's a little wobbly, but they figured out that there was an acceleration based on what they've looked at in DNA and been able to track, an acceleration of all of these mutations that happened approximately 3100 BC. When they did this original study, they said it was about 5100 years previously, and so that was from whenever that study was done, and that's how they came up with this date of about 3100 BC. The flood is, according to the Bible's, well, it depends on whether you look at the Hebrew texts, the Sumerian texts, or the Greek Septuagint. You're going to get different numbers, and I'm not going to get into that. That's another thing that you could spend a lot of time on. But there's a wobble in there of about 500 or so years, okay, between 3100 to 26. So if you look at the dating in the book of Genesis and just track that out, the flood came 1656 years after Adam. And if you track that back, that ends up being about 2656 BC, something like that, BC, something like that. So so that 500-year wobble is right in that area of, shall we say, margin of error. Okay? So, but what they found out is that whether you do European descent or African descent, the mutations take off at the same time. I don't have anything from the subcontinent of Asia, anything I can give you, but that's where they studied. And they both ended up with almost identical, within the same year, identical times. So again, that's proof that the isotopes, and isotopes are just something that have this, you know, same amount of, I think it's protons, but, and there's families, but they have different numbers of neutrons. And then as they decay because of the radioactivity, they transition into another form or another chemical. So what's an isotope? Your periodic elements. If you ever took chemical or physical, you know, what I want to say here. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's just, it's a chemical that's decaying and it moves into a different type of chemical. So it goes from, you know, carbon 14 to nitrogen or something like that, and it's not good for your body. But they're very, 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 very small amounts that this happens. Okay, and we don't all have the same mutations. Although the mutations are throughout the planet, very few of us have a lot of the same mutations. That's another thing that I read that was kind of interesting. But they're so widespread, that's why lifespan has come down and why we all wrinkle and end up dying. And eventually what it is, it takes out your organs, is what it does.
it eventually wears your, just breaks down your organs. That's why we don't live much past 110 years anymore, which was the age of Joseph when he passed. Okay, so that's just kind of a little review there. I wanted to talk about that, kind of throw that out. Sorry, Larry, for misrepresenting it. It sounded like it was 40 feet above you, the canopy. It was way up there. It would have to be suborbital is where they figured it was at. Okay, and I'm just presenting from a standpoint of, if we were to compare this with what we know scientifically, would it work? No, it will not work. Could God hold a canopy up for 1,656 years till the flood? Yeah, he could. That sounds like he'd have to go against the physical laws he set up that allow us to discover the things that we discover through science. It sounds a little bit of a stretch to me for him to do that. So that's my perspective. Again, this is opinion. Y'all know how I feel about my opinion. So, but it is opinion. That's all it is. And that's why it's called the hydroplate theory and the things that come from it. But it does answer a bunch of questions that evolutionists have struggled with for 100 and some years. Every one of them that are really difficult, the hydroplate theory addresses scientifically and answers scientifically, and it makes sense. That's why I think this is such a good subject matter to look at and to understand, because where evolutionists are going to come after you, if you try and claim a worldwide flood, they're going to try and avoid that with everything they've got. They're going to say a bunch of localized floods or a series of small floods over a period of time. There's all these things they're going to come at you with. They're not going to want to come at you with a worldwide flood, because that they know is in the Bible. So they're not going to allow it, at least not in conversation. But if you can address this subject, you don't have to know everything I'm telling you, but just generally have some of these ideas in conversation with people, I'm telling you, some of these things are a person's hot button, and that'll get the door open for a study. Just open the door for a study. So Walt Brown said, okay, so if the canopy is unlikely, really unlikely, okay, then what's the other option? Okay? So he goes back and we look at the verses here that talk about the expanse, particularly verses 6 through 8a, where it says, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, let it separate waters from waters, and God made the expanse, separate the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And that's where the question comes. Okay, what are the waters below? What are the waters above? Okay, and it was so, and God called the expanse heaven. And then you can go on and read the rest of the verses, you know, up through about verse 20. Every time it talks about the expanse, when it's talking about where the sun, the moon, the stars, all that stuff is, it adds of the heavens. So that's another thing that should make you go, why? So if the expanse, you know, this is this thing where the canopy was and then up there, what, you know, we'll raise some of these questions that he brings up with the understanding of if it's this canopy. He has some questions that he asks, and I'll share with you tonight. But first I want to talk about some key Hebrew words in these passages, just so you know. Okay, so some of these are pretty clear. Waters, you know, is the word here, you know, in the midst of the water. This is water. It's water. It's liquid water. It's mayim, M-A-Y-I-M. It always means liquid water. It's not a vapor or a solid. There are different words in Hebrew for that. Okay, and it says, had the water in Genesis 1, verses 6 through 8, been a cloud, vapor, mist, or ice, other Hebrew words would have been more appropriate. Again, see, these are things that when you're reading this, if you do a study, these are going to create questions. All right, so when you look at 2 Peter 3, we'll get to that later, but it says the same thing there in 2 Peter 3. It says the world was formed out of water, the earth, came up out of water, and by water. And we'll talk about how that's important in reference to the waters that Walt Brown has postulated. And I think it's been proven that there are subterranean water now. There's no doubt about that. But that there were waters below in these subterranean chambers, and then there were waters above. And he says the water was probably a mile thick above the earth's crust, and then a mile thick the water was below the earth's crust. And he originally started with about a 10-mile thick crust, but when I read some of his latest stuff, he says that could have been up to 30 to 60 miles thick, the crust, okay?
in places. I'm going to try and do a little drawing here later if we got time to kind of give you an idea how day two into day three would happen and explain that. But mayim, that's waters. Separate is the Hebrew word badal, B-A-D-A-L. And then when you put a preposition, I think it's in our, if you were to get an interlinear, I think it's B-E or B-A in front of badal, it's a prepositional form, and that usually is when it's in that form means it's between. So that's the form that we have here in verse 6 when it says, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, let it separate, badal, from waters. Waters from waters, it means it's between. Something's between these waters. Obviously, the text suggests that, but just so you know that. And it's saying that there's no overlapping where one is going through the other. They're interfacing, they're touching, but there's definitely delineation between them, okay? And he says, if there was a canopy that was vapor, liquid, or ice lying above the atmosphere, being in a suborbital, sorry, gang, above the earth, the atmospheric gases would mix with the canopy, and that creates a problem. So again, God would have to suspend all those laws that he established. And I'm saying that because those laws are what have allowed us to discover the things that we've discovered from a physical science perspective, mechanical science, all those kind of things, all right? In the midst of is the Hebrew word tevek. Okay, and that word is it's about 418 times in the Old Testament, and it usually is translated midst, among, inside, within, middle, center. You kind of get the idea, it's in the middle of something, right? All right. So there's a Jewish scholar by the name of Kasudo who commented saying regarding verses Genesis 1, 6, and 7, this word can also mean bisect, by the way, tevek. He said, it is true in the Pentateuch, references made to the division of the primeval world ocean into two halves, situated one above the other, with something between them. Okay? There's a guy from the 11th century that wrote in a Rashi commentary, stated that the expanse was in the exact center of the waters. Okay, and all the Hebrew language seems to imply that. Okay? So, canopy theories, I addressed it, you know, that less than one half of 1% of water. Heaven, and this is interesting too, I'll get into this later too. Shemayim. S-H-A-M-A-Y-I-M. Do you hear waters in here? Water? Mayim? Remember waters? Water? Remember that. Okay? Because that's going to be one of the ideas that Walt Brown suggested, that others have suggested about what this heaven is that's in verse 8. Okay? That's so troublesome to be able to explain. So heaven had a variety of meanings in ancient Hebrew, as it does in modern languages. Moses used Shemayim to describe outer space, that's in Genesis 26:4, the atmosphere, Genesis 26, you can look at the context, see what I'm talking about, where God dwells. So we know there's three heavens, right? Paul said, I know a man, whether it's in the body, I don't know, 14 years ago he had an opportunity to go to the third heaven, right? So you got heaven, where the sky and the clouds, and then you got stars and planets, and then where God dwells, all right? So heaven also was a picture where God would dwell. And where angels dwell, that's in Exodus, or Genesis 28, 12. And then the source of blessings came from this location, heaven, Genesis 49, 25. Okay, just a few of them for you to, if you're writing them down, you can check them out. Now we get to the word that really is the one we want to talk about, and that's the word for expanse, or if you carry a King James, New King James, or an ASV, you're going to see it called firmament rather than expanse. Okay? So it's going to be translated that firmament rather than expanse. And so why? You know, again, we go back and we really don't know what its original meaning was because that language has changed some, the way the words are used. But it does come from a root word called raka, which we'll talk about that, which means to spread out, beat out, or hammer out as one would a malleable metal, a piece of metal that you can make into a sheet, you know, and make it spread out, okay? It can also mean that you're plating something, you know. This may explain why the Greek Septuagint translated rakia, not raka, which is the root for rakia, translated rakia 16 out of 17 times with the Greek word stereoma. Stereoma, I'm sorry, which means a firm or solid structure. How did we get firmament, the Latin Vulgate? It came about 382, used the Latin term firmamentum, okay, based off of what they understood, the Greek stereoma, okay, which also denotes solidness and firmness. So the King James translators in 1611 coined that word firmament. That's how we get it in the translations that we have today where it's said firmament. All right. So Isaiah 42:5, we should probably look at that real quick. And then I want to go to Psalms. Isaiah 42, verse 5. Thus says God, or Elohim, the Lord Yahweh, all right, or the I Am. So I always think of God as the manifold God. That's plural form of God. So the manifold God, then the self-existent one, or the I Am, who created the heavens and stretch them out. That's a different word. He's talking about the heavens, and that's what they see when they send up all these newfangled, things like the Hubble telescope and the Webb telescope. They see the heavens look like they're stretching. Bible says that. Okay, who spread out? That's that word raka, right? Who spread out the earth and its offspring? That would be vegetation. It's talking about there, trees, fruit trees, vegetation. Who gives breath to the people and spirit those. So that's that word, spread out. So you get the idea that even Isaiah is communicating that at one point the earth got spread out. Are you guys with me? Everybody doing okay? Okay. So, first of all, I think it's Psalm 136 I want. I think that's the one. Remember we read the portions that had day one, day two, day three, and then day four is when the sun, the moon, the stars went in for seasons and all that stuff. So that's the first 4 days that are recorded in Genesis 1. All right, let's begin in verse 5 here of Psalm 136. This is the one that has "for his loving kindness is everlasting," the response. So it says in verse 5, to him, to God, who made the heavens with skill, for his loving kindness is everlasting. To him who spread out the earth above the waters. Did you catch that? For his loving kindness is everlasting. To him who made the great lights, sun, moon, stars. For his loving kindness is everlasting. The sun to rule by day, for his loving kindness is everlasting. The moon, stars to rule by night, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Isn't that interesting? Verse 6, to him who spread out the earth above the waters. So if we just go to the scripture and just read the verses that talk about this, we can see that it doesn't sound like there's a canopy. It's the earth that's above the waters, and then there's waters above that. So that's the subterranean and then the regular above ground waters where Walt Brown figures, okay, this has got to be what it is. So I'll try and do a little drawing here. And hopefully you'll be able to see this. And I am not a good artist. Okay, so there's, like we would have three of these. Okay, and like I said, I'm not going to be any kind of a rival to, Michelangelo, trust me. But anyway, it's separated. So you would have, over here would be a timeline, like we would say day. Boy, my writing's really good tonight. So we go like day two down through day three, right? So there's a process. So you got water above, then you got this water up here, then this is kind of, not all the same shape. There's your earth's crust, water below, then here's your mantle.
My hand is shaking like I can't believe. That's because I had to draw. Okay, so that's what it is. So in day two, it says, boom, God put this expansion in the midst of the waters, right? And then it starts to, this middle section here, which I'm just going to draw it, okay, like this. Now it's starting to misshape some areas. It's thinner, kind of coming down in others, all right? Because of the pressures that are going on in the waters. And then by day three, what's happened is this expanse, okay, it's like this. It's come down in places like this and hit the mantle. And, you know, I know I'm not doing this as well, but, you know. Whatever. So it's dropping down and it's creating like pillars, support mechanisms. Okay, so that'd be day two to day three. And so when it does this, when it pushes down here, all right, this is going to sink down too. So you're going to have this push up, and then as the water rolls in to fill it, it's going to push that down even more. So you're going to develop more of these pillars upon which the crust is then going to be supported. Now, day four, sun, moon, and stars. We know that the sun and the moon, due to gravitational force, have tidal pumping that takes place with the waters on the earth, both above and below. So the tide goes out, tide comes in, high tide, low tide, right? So high pressure, low pressure. So the reason I'm pointing this out, that's a lousy drawing and I apologize, but anyway, the reason I'm pointing this out is because if this didn't happen in this order, if the sun and the moon and the stars went before what's described here in the book of Genesis, as the expanse was created, and then the earth came up out of the water, remember 2 Peter 3, was made out of the water and by the water, because when the water fills that depression, it's going to then push on the side of that rock, and it's going to push that up even higher. See how it's coming up out of the water and being made by the water? You guys, did I make that clear? Am I losing you? Are you all with me? That makes sense? Okay. See the language? Isn't this just awesome how God's got this language so right? It's just amazing to me. You know, it's just amazing to me. But if you'd have had the sun, moon, and the stars there, the crust would have been just, no stability, would have been yanked all over. Who knows what would have happened? So even the order and the days and the events make total sense from a physics standpoint. It's just, it's amazing. Okay, there's more I could get into that, but you know, I don't want to really go way deep into that tonight. But those are the words. This is kind of an idea of how this is done. I wanted to share Isaiah 42 and Psalm 136 because it says the waters above, right? So you got waters above, waters below. And that's the way it was set up. Subterranean waters. And that's where the flood water came for the flood, was primarily from the subterranean chambers. With a mile of water below, that all the way around, spherically, all the way around the earth, okay, that would supply enough water for what we see on the earth today that's now above ground. All right? All right. Now, here's what he says. Okay, so you say the expanse means the atmosphere, clouds, okay, birds, outer space, primarily in the beginning section of Genesis 1. It's not so much talking about where God dwells. It's talking about the heavens in reference to the earth, atmosphere, outer space. If the expanse meant the atmosphere, outer space, you got a problem. You got more than a problem. You got a few, okay? All right. The Septuagint and the Vulgate translators, if heaven expanse and heaven meant atmosphere, outer space. We're talking about heaven now along with expanse, okay? If heaven meant atmosphere or outer space, like, you know, back in Genesis 1, okay? Then the Septuagint and the Vulgate translators incorrectly associated solidness with it in verse 6 and 8. Okay? You have to think about that.
Question one, why was the word rakia followed by the phrase of the heavens in Genesis 1, 14, 17, 15, 17, and 20? If the expanse, heaven, all these, wouldn't that be redundant? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay. If rakia implies a canopy, like I said earlier, why wasn't one of the other three primary Hebrew words that are translated canopy used? They weren't. These are just questions. Question three, Genesis 1:1 says the heavens were created on the first day, doesn't it? In the beginning, God created the heavens, the earth was formless and void, you know, moving over the surface, let there be light, there was light, God said the light was good, God separated light from the darkness, God called the light day, the darkness called night, and there was evening, there was morning, one day. He created the heavens and the earth, right? Says it was created on day one. Okay. Then if rakia always means heaven, okay, or is associated with heaven, atmosphere, outer space, then Genesis 1:8a, God called the expanse heaven, says heaven was created on the second day. Are you following me? Okay. Day one, God created what? Heavens and the earth. Verse 8. This expanse that was created in verse 6. Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters. Let it separate the waters from the waters. Okay. Below the expanse, above the expanse. At the end of the second day, God called the expanse heaven. See how he's saying you're making expanse and heaven one and the same? If you're... Okay, now he says, now you got a problem here in verse 8. Because it says here in verse 8 that heaven was created on the second day. But it said in Genesis, very early verses, it was created on the first day. What? See, there's things that should make you go, okay, something's, you know. Right. Right. So, and once again, verse 8 defines the expanse is heaven, after the word heavens were first used in Genesis 1:1. So normally a word's meaning is understood from the context of its first usage, wouldn't it be? Usually, yeah. Question 4, Genesis 1:9 states, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place and let the dry land appear. Obviously these are what? Earth's waters, right? Surface waters. If heaven meant atmosphere, remember, and God called the expanse heaven, okay? If heaven meant atmosphere or outer space, okay, atmosphere, clouds, birds, outer space, stars, all right? Trying to make sure you keep this clear in your mind. Okay, and if expanse meant a canopy surrounding the earth, which some people would say, why would Genesis 1:9 not read this way? Let the waters below be gathered into one place. That would have been sufficient, clear, and consistent with the phrasing of Genesis 1:7, right? Why did he have to add the heavens, below the heavens, if it's the heaven, if it's associated with the heaven? Do you follow me? Are you with me? You guys crazy going, oh, I'm confused yet. Are you guys doing all right with that? I'm looking for heads to bob yes or no or okay. Genesis 1:9, let the waters below the heavens. Why is he saying below the heavens? If the expanse is heaven. See what I'm getting at? Why? What? Okay. See, you probably never stopped and thought about this until I'm bringing it up tonight, but believe me, there's people out there that want to attack the Bible and say this is all baloney that you believe, and they are going to know this stuff and come at you with it. Let the waters be below be gathered in one place would be sufficient. Why does it add below the heavens? You guys getting this? Larry.
My understanding is
Get that close enough so you can
hear. There's not just one water. Or so in verse six, let there be expanse in the midst of the waters, let it separate waters from waters. Okay, and that God made the expanse separate waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And so the waters.
Remember, canopy theory says the expanse is up there above.
Yeah, and I don't get too hung up on canopy, the word canopy. I just canopy's not in Genesis, so
what
I don't.
I'm saying, does that seem like it's surface waters to you, though, that it's talking about?
No. Because in verse 8, he called the expanse heaven. So, and I don't personally think that he's talking about where God lives.
No,
in verse 8. He's when I read that, I think he's talking about the sky.
I'm talking about verse 9.
So then we get to verse 9. Let the water below the heavens, and I'm using the word sky, be gathered into one place, and let dry land appear. And it was so. That's how I read that. Is that how you read that?
No.
Why? What are we missing?
It's the surface waters. I'm just trying to get you.
So how is heavens surface water? How does heavens become the surface?
Well, what I'm saying is, wouldn't it be, if you got to go back to where it says.
But we got a word heavens in there.
I got that.
Okay.
Okay, but it says, and he called the expanse heaven.
So it's above somewhere.
Is heaven above or below?
Heaven's definitely above.
I mean, for everything on earth.
Sheol is below.
Right. So what I'm saying is everything when we talk about heaven, when we're looking at it from an earthly perspective, is above us, whether it's the birds in the air, heaven, the planets in the outer space.
What are you saying?
Sorry.
That's fine. See, so what I'm – no, you're fine. What I'm saying is that heaven, the way we understand heaven, even in these verses, when we think of it, heaven is always something above us, whether it's the clouds and the birds. Those are the heavens, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And then you got the heavens above, outer space. Those are heavens. And then heaven where God dwells, which none of this is talking about where God dwells right now. Okay. Right? So if the waters are below the heavens, right?
They're going to be below no matter what.
No matter what, exactly, no matter what. So why in verse 9 do they clarify and say, let the waters below the heavens be gathered?
Well, can't there be two waters? I mean, there's a waters in the, and why don't we use canopy? There's clouds that are filled with water, right. Whatever. And I know you say that that's
a different word.
That's a different word because it's a vapor, but... You know, yeah, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if my question makes sense.
What I'm saying is that, that's your Bible, right?
Yeah.
As he said, the more natural way of saying is, what should just be, then God said, let the waters below be gathered into one place, because they're all below heaven, right? Why does he add below the heavens? Why clarify? That's the question.
The waters are always below the heavens. I mean, unless you're talking about the water canopy.
I agree that they're always below the heaven, and we are in agreement. Okay. But why is he clarifying that if they're always below the heaven? See, that's the question.
I really don't know.
Why would you ask that?
Why would I ask
what? Why would you clarify with a statement like that? If all waters are below heaven, why would you say the waters specifically below the heavens?
I honestly don't know. I mean, you're saying, and so why are you saying you said it?
Right. I'm just saying there's no need for that clarification phrase because all the waters are below heaven.
Okay.
Right? So I hope that's... Right. We're going to get to that. It has to do with the expanse.
So that's the comment that's killing me. Okay. There's still water above somewhere.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that.
Okay. Well, I think that's what's got us all...
Well, I'm just trying to. I'm trying to get us to think through. Why is he adding this if the expanse is up above?
This is the expanse. It's right here. The birds are flying above us right now.
What's that?
So, I think. I mean, you're saying why is the clarification there? Well, God put it there, so it needs to be there. If you ask me, why is it there? Because the earth is water, and he creates the earth. By water, and then he separates the waters. And what is separating the waters is the atmosphere that we are walking through. It is the wind that's blowing by us right now. It is the sky.
He says it's the heaven.
Yeah, the heaven, the first heaven where the birds fly. That wasn't what, that, so I'm fine with the word heaven there because there's the first heaven. So he's saying the waters below the heaven are the seas. That's how I read it.
Okay.
And then so that would imply that the expanse then is where we're walking. It's the nitrogen, the oxygen, the carbon dioxide, where the birds are flying, the clouds are. That's the first heaven. So to me, that implies that there's waters above the heavens. Somewhere.
So that would be a canopy then.
I don't think it's the canopy theory.
But it says the heaven.
My question is, where's the waters above?
Right.
Because the clarification that we have waters below.
Yeah.
And it's the waters below that are gathered together into seas.
Exactly.
Which means there must be waters above. So if you were to ask me the same question you asked Larry, why does he make the distinction? Right. Because there are waters above. What's that?
But again, I think both you and Larry are missing the key thing. It says heaven. So everything's above. So you got to have water somewhere up in the heaven is what I'm saying. If you're saying the waters below or the waters on earth, there's the waters above. So that's what I'm saying. Heaven's the problem.
Yeah.
See, and I'm going to get to that. Did you want to throw in, Jerry?
No.
Okay. Okay. See, I'm just trying to get you to think about it. It says heaven. So we got to define what's heaven in this verse. And that's what I'm going to get to. But I'm just throwing out some questions that are making you think and confuse you, obviously. Not intentionally, but you can see that this, if you think about it, it will make you ask a bunch more questions. We're almost at 8 o'clock here. I got a couple of minutes, but just want to get through this. So again, it says, let the waters below be gathered into one place. If it's heaven, okay, the expanse is called heaven. He called the expanse heaven, verse 8. And he says, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place. I mean, if this expanse is heaven up above, why would he need to say below? Because it's above already. Why would he put that clarifying comment in there below? That's all I'm trying to get you to see. Okay? Last question. This will keep you guys thinking for the next week. Genesis 1:14 says the sun, moon, and stars were placed in the rakia, the expanse, of the heavens. Genesis 1:7 says liquid water was placed above the rakia. Okay? Notice it doesn't say of the heavens in verse 7, but it does say it's above the rakia, right? The expanse. Does this mean that the rakia, this expanse, is the universe? And liquid water surrounded the universe?
Which word is saying liquid water?
Okay, verse 7. Genesis 1:14. God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens. Expanse. That's that word I want us to focus on. Where are the sun, moon, and star located? Outer space. Okay? All right. Drop down to verse 6. Then God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. Okay, now where again are the lights in the heavens? They're in the expanse. See, I'm trying to slow down and get you guys to just think this through. Then verse 7. God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which are above the expanse. Okay. It says here that the expanse where the sun, moon, and star are, right? That's where they are. So where's these waters that are above it? See, this idea of the expanse and the heaven here together are the two key questions that I'm trying to get us to see. And that's where you can end up with, so does that mean that there's a canopy covering the whole universe? Is the whole universe inside the canopy?
So is, in your perspective, is God using expanse as a noun or as an adjective?
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. So I didn't intend to confuse you guys, but I did want to raise these questions because the expanse is what we need to understand. And heaven in verse 8 is the big problem. Take one more question from... That's where the problem is, verse 8, where it says, and he called the expanse heaven. That's the problem.
So in our... In the expanse above our world, we have the edge of gravity. So we have, you're crossing over the area where there is no gravity and there is no water. Versus in our, below that is our atmosphere where the gravity begins to pull everything back, which could have had a lot to do with the formation of our earth and the keeping of our earth. He is the master designer. But anyway, I just wanted to emphasize that. So my question would be, the waters we're talking about is below the edge of outer space and gravity, is on that dividing line between outer space and gravity, right?
Sure. Okay. You can, but that's not going to hold water. It's not going to hold water. It's not going to hold water. Sorry, Nolan, it's going to take longer than I thought. He's already got his head buried in the scripture. He's probably going, why did I ever let Kevin do this?
So I'm just trying to clarify for me, maybe other people. You're just saying the expanse can be used in different ways, and it's obvious that there's an expanse between these two waters. So you're saying there's this sea.
That's the key.
There's this sea. There's land. And then there's water under the crust.
Bingo.
Okay. Clarifying.
That's why I did the drawing. There was waters above the crust, waters below.
Okay.
And then what I did is, okay, let's look at this from the canopy standpoint.
Yeah.
And I asked these questions. If it's a canopy, it doesn't work. And then what the real problem is, I keep taking you to that verse 8, is where it says the expanse is called heaven. That's where the problem is. Yes. Yes, and that's why I read those. So the earth was spread out. That's the point. But what I'm saying is that if you just read this literally and look at expanse and look at what it says in verse 8 where it says, and the expanse was called heaven, now you're like, what? And that's where we end up with these water canopy ideas. And then some people say, well, then did the water canopy just go above the atmosphere of the earth? Like you said, Rain. Or does it encircle the entire universe? Because that's where the sun and the moon says here that they're located in the expanse. The difference is that you'll notice in these verses that there's clarifying comments, which is what I was raising with Larry in verse 9. Why, if the expanse is heaven and we know that's above us, and I want you guys just to think just logically here for a minute. Why, if this is above us, the heaven's above us, and the expanse is above us, why does he even add, let the waters below the heavens? Because everything's already below the heavens. You wouldn't need to add that clarification. The fact it's there, the fact that in 14, 15, 17, and 20 it adds the expanse of the heavens is another clue. See, that we need to see. That's the point. Where we have to get to, and we will next week, is this heaven issue. The expanse was called heaven.
Just to make sure I understand again where you're at, is if you were to take the cross section of the earth and the sky, the atmosphere, and then the space around it, if you were to cut it in half and then you were to label each one of those layers, could not each of them be called an expanse?
That's what the scripture teaches.
That's what I thought.
Okay, well, I just want to be clear because I texted Jared today. We have an awkward split in the middle where the award ceremony is going to split up Jared's class. So I need Kevin's class to go an extra week.
I think we just made sure.
So that's why I'm asking all these questions. And then what I hope, if you can do for next week, is can you throw Psalm 18:11 into the mix? Because I think that's going to help me.
I got a bunch.
Okay.
There's a bunch coming next week. Okay, here's what I'm trying to tell you tonight. The expanse is the crust. Okay, the crust of the earth, which rose out of the waters. So you got waters above that, which would be the surface waters. You got waters below, which would be the subsurface, subterranean waters. Okay, that's what the expanse is. Where everybody gets thrown, and I was just playing with you with these questions tonight, but where everybody gets thrown is in verse 8 where it says that the expanse is called heaven. Now, there was a scientist back in the early 1700s that said maybe the scripture should read, rather than God called the expanse heaven, should have said God called heaven the expanse. He says he thinks the word order could be differentiated. Okay? Can I go 3-4 more minutes, Mr. Toole? You guys, are you guys okay? Just get a little more clarification before we go into next week. Are you guys okay with that? Because I got you thoroughly confused. Okay, remember I told you Shemayim? Mayim is water. Shemayim? You know, in the Hebrew, they do not have vowels. They just use consonants. Yahweh, YWHW, right? And depending on where the vowel points go, tells you how that word is supposedly pronounced and what it means. All right? Now, there is guys that have said that if you take that word that we see heaven there in verse 8, this is just another proposition I'm going to put forward for you. Okay, and then there's a third one that I'll save till next week. Okay, that seems to be what Walt Brown of late has decided he thinks is most likely the answer. But the number two option that was brought up was not just the word ordering. It doesn't look like the word ordering we can really make work. It just doesn't look like the Hebrew linguists said that that's the way it could be translated. It just doesn't work. But this guy said that if you take the vowel points in Shemayim, and if you put different vowel points in there, what that word heaven says there is actually would be fire in the waters. Why is that there? Why is that even? What? Who cares about fire in the waters? Because when you get the kind of pressure you get with the kind of weight that we have with a crust on those subterranean waters, along with supercritical properties, what happens is those pillars, and I really drew this poorly, and I apologize, guys, but these pillars that came down, there is so much pressure on those, and they can go nowhere because of all the equilibrium of pressures. They glow in the water. It's been able to be reproduced scientifically. That kind of pressure will make fire in the water. Not smoke on the water. Fire in the water. Right. I'll get you that information so you can check it out next week. Isn't that interesting? That is what happens when you have that kind of pressure. You can actually have fire in the water. Is that the answer? I don't know. Being honest with you. But these are some interesting little... So the guy says if you change a couple of those vowel points, if they're not right, then it makes that fire in the waters. It makes it a compound word. See how that happened? Is that interesting? Or y'all just, please, Kevin, don't talk anymore. Is that where you're at? I'm so confused. My head hurts. All right. Listen, I didn't mean to confuse you horribly, and I really didn't. But these are things you got to think about because of what it says. So again, we're going to answer verse 8. God called the expanse heaven. I just gave you two options that guys gave. Switch the word order. It doesn't necessarily look like it's going to work. The other one looks like that could be a possibility with the vowel points. I don't know if it's a strong possibility, but it is a possibility. And the third one we'll talk about next week. That's the cliffhanger to get you back. I hate to do this, but is there any quick closing question? Does this help to clarify a little bit what I did at the end? Does this help a little bit? Again, I presented questions that you need to be aware are going to be there if you're going to hold to a canopy theory. Right? And this is the common response when people say, where did all the water come from the flood? This is why the canopy theory is being discussed by me. Thank you for your attention, guys.